Welcome back, folks, to episode 52 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. And what we're going to be discussing today is phenomena that occurs whenever we tend to have a little bit of trouble in our lives, whenever maybe we may feel a little pessimistic. And also, like, things may seem like they're changing really fast and may or may not work out. And we tend to start thinking about future possibilities, the negatives, the potential outcomes. We tend to lean more on our predictive thinking, and that predictive thinking is something that we develop expectations from. So what we're going to point out is three different modes of thinking about things, and these are little tropes that we take on occasion whenever we start thinking a certain way. The first one is pretty much one of the things that we hear often in common speak, and that is, you will see it when you believe it. And that tends to take on this very doubting Thomas skeptical perspective, which skepticism isn't a bad thing within a correct measure. You can't have an extreme of that. You can also have an extreme of being terribly gullible, and anything that someone says is taken as fact or sacrosanct. So whenever you say something along the lines, I'll believe it when I see it, sometimes it's cast with a little bit of sarcasm, but there's also a sense of show me. I need proof. And there's nothing wrong with that perspective, but it definitely does create a sense of looking at things through a lens of no evidence, no belief. And of course, we know that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And when we think about abstract concepts, sometimes even the idea of air, that's an abstract, concrete, very measurable gas that we need to live. It's not unlike that. Just because you don't see the air doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So in a practical self-regulatory sense, there are certain things that we do require evidence of behavior or evidence of certain interactions that give us a sense of support where we can decide to believe or not. And we are speaking of things right now that aren't necessarily survival level thinking. But this definitely could be applied to a situation where one is gathering evidence that could possibly affect one's livelihood, one's life, or safety for that matter. So I'll believe it when I see it. Now, the second statement is a slight bit different, and Dr. Wayne Dyer, the late Dr. Wayne Dyer, I used to love listening to his lectures on PBS and seeing his videos and reading his books, and he always was very, very calm in his delivery of some pretty deep understandings of how we interact as people and really how our inner process occurs as a result of our state, mental state in most cases, and our emotional state. So whenever he came up with the book title, You'll See It When You Believe It, he was pointing at the fact that sometimes we have to have a very self-disciplined and very self-aware perspective to be able to determine our ability to see things. And that can be an abstract understanding sense of seeing versus an objective, I can look at a sofa and it's not there until I start believing in it. Not exactly that, but more so when we interact, we may see a manifestation of certain behaviors and interactions with people where they are more apt to be open and integrating our ability to see more deeply and recognize the negatives and also keep those things under control, the self-regulatory aspect, so that we can have better outcomes. And then the outcomes are the things that we see as a result of believing differently, that maybe by doing these things that are more pro-social, less adversarial, and less isolating and judgmental, that we start becoming, in quotes, more deserving, is what some people would say. But in actuality, we're reflecting what it is that people may want to see. At the same time, we're projecting what we would like to see from them, and we're giving environmental suggestion as much as we're receiving it. And whenever we believe that that's a good thing to do and we do it authentically, then we're creating a change. So Dr. Wayne Dyer said some pretty profound stuff in that statement that put the initial statement of "I'll see it when I believe it" on its ear, but in a more practical sense, encouraging more peace in one's life, not only with other people, but with oneself, it makes a lot of sense to be able to say that. So changing how one thinks is important. Changing how one believes is equally so, but sometimes more so, because you have to have a feel behind it. Any belief that we have or that we develop has a sense or a feeling, a very visceral quality of feeling that supports what it is that is our ability to articulate in words as far as what we are believing. So very important stuff. Now, the third statement that is very close to this is that how we are, our state, impacts not only what we believe, but also how we believe it. So the state of body that we are in actually shapes and impacts what it is that we believe, the content of it, but also how we believe it, the intensity of it. Or if we believe it at all, do we scoff at it or just take it as absolute, utter nonsense? So there has to be a very visceral, physical, body supportive quality of sorts that parallels those thoughts. So to reiterate some things that we've covered in the podcast before, is that whenever we see things in our mind at the visual level, we're talking about an onset of visual recall. For instance, if we've seen something, and if we're wanting to believe something, chances are it's already in our memory bank, and we're making sense with it at the higher cognitive level. That comes on at 1.2 seconds, but the visual recall, the memory recall of events that we see outside in our life, that we can record and say, well, there was a chair there, and Auntie so-and-so was sitting in it, that sort of thing, that part that brings up the visual picture before we even have narrative or even description about, comes on at 150 to 300 milliseconds, 400 times faster than our best reasoning, our best cognitions about things, where we can make philosophy, make rules and guidelines, and then make sense of stuff. So how we are, our state of body, does impact and affect what it is that we believe or not believe, depending on the situation, of course, and the content of the information, but also what we believe, and this is the content part. Well, what is it that I'm attempting to believe or disbelieve, and also whether or not the belief is particularly intense, and this is the how I believe, which is a very important part as well. Often when we come to a conclusion or a standard or belief that we develop that we tend to keep because it is somehow not only a reference point, but also an expedient, it's a time saver in that we don't have so much thinking to do because we don't want to sit and deeply think about every singular decision. We as humans are energy conservatives, in the sense that we don't want to waste time unnecessarily, so we can have energy to do things such as eating, finding a mate, having a good time, this sort of stuff, or things that are a little more important than having to rehash and rethink things over and over. So our memory serves us in being able to pull those things up so we can be efficient and save energy whenever we're going about our lives and our day-to-day stuff. And you shouldn't have to deal with things like they're brand new again. And there's nothing wrong with the new. It's whenever we don't have enough novelty over time that we get bored, or maybe even start feeling like life has no meaning in the more extreme sense, because we're doing something not only repetitive, but we do it over and over over a period of time, and our engagement and our sense of novelty is not kicking off. We're not getting as much payoff, so to speak. And things become mindless. And often when we hear about people working in cubicles and doing repetitive work on an assembly line, we hear about mindless, soul-stealing, soul-crushing work. And notice the descriptions, mindless, soul-stealing, soul-crushing. And there's an elevation of the importance of how difficult this is just to have the will to continue to do that year in, year out. whether it be a career or a job that you had just taken on, and maybe realizing that this may or may not be for me. And it's not just with work, but also with things that if we enjoy doing, whether it be work or even a hobby for that matter, that I have a sense of enjoyment. There's a quality of identity that goes with that as well, especially if there's a skill involved wherever I feel really proud of myself or feel like I have accomplished something or done something that is significant. We identify with that and we use that as part of our badges of growth and courage, so to speak, in dealing with this so-called life that we're living. Now, why is this important to self-regulatory skill? And that is the question. And the fact of the matter is that to be able to regulate ourselves more effectively, whenever you're up against a challenge, for instance, whenever things change really fast, often things may seem a little confusing, what we probably don't want to do in the sense of experiencing feelings is to overly engage and overly identify with those feelings. Because not unlike a badge of courage or this encouragement pat on the back or a certificate that you've earned, we also have good feelings tied to those accomplishments or events. We can equally have a negative association with an event such as, I lost my job, I crashed my car, or I have a legal issue going on, or things that would have not been expected, or maybe we saw coming down the pipes but we couldn't avert. Often there's a large emotional impact. It's a node in our life if we were to look back at the narrative like a line on a scale of sorts. And there's a big blip there, like on the radar. Whenever they capture something, we capture an emotional blip or maybe even a physical blip, or there's something physical going on there that changes the normal state of being that's above or below what we'd call our normal baseline of being. So the important thing is knowing that whenever things start, usually they start small. It's not often that it starts with a great start, with an absolute shock and just totally overwhelming. So there is a gradation, a gradual growth of not only attention to the detail, but also the emotion starts to grow when we start sorting out things. But what we have to recognize is that we do have a large measure of potential control there. And this is going to be strategy number one, and that is catching the feelings early in the event and redirecting your thinking. And maybe even telling yourself this, and this has worked for me in the past, but also a number of folks, and this isn't a positive affirmation, think positive and make bad things go away sense, but rather redirecting yourself in the sense that you can tell yourself before the emotions get overwhelming and start driving that things aren't as bad as they seem. Also, instead of speaking it in the negative, you can always say, okay, this is different, and I don't want to make a judgment about it prematurely because I don't know what the outcome is going to be. Right now, it looks like it's moving in this direction, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a negative, and it doesn't have to be a negative. By having this little bit of self-talk that says that it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Okay, things are changing. Oh, I didn't expect this, and that's okay. At the very least, I know something is changing. I'm not sure what the answers are, but I know how to seek answers. I know how to find the information I need to make the best decision, and I can start to think about what the possibilities are. And I don't have to have an emotional breakdown. I don't have to be emotionally overwhelmed. I don't have to get mentally overwhelmed by just over-ruminating on this, and just know that I can do only as much as I can do. And if I can recognize that things are not in my hands right now to change, or there are things that are out of my hands that I'm willing to, for instance, sleep on and just say, you know what, there's no more I can do today, nothing else I can change today, and I don't have access to this business to ask them questions, and these folks are off till Monday, and it's Saturday, so I'll have to wait, but I'm not going to allow myself to get overwhelmed and to not allow myself to enjoy my life. It doesn't mean that you're going to enjoy things to its peak. Doesn't mean that you're going to depress. It just means that you're going to keep doing as normal as much as you can, and know and recognize that you know that there are things that are in your control. There are things that are in the control of others, and not in the sense of absolute control, but rather in the sense that they can affect what can be done decision-wise, because at some point the control will be in your hands regardless of the situation, where you have to decide on what to do. And sometimes we can't make those decisions till we can get information, especially if you're dealing with an organization or a business that may only work Monday through Friday and they close after 5 p.m. So 5 p.m. Friday, you can't get a hold of them. 8 in the morning Monday is the next time you can have any contact with them. So you have this hiatus not only to think about things, but also to do your life like you would have otherwise, and know that if you worry too much about things, or even start to worry, versus know that, okay, whenever this comes up, I know I'm going to deal with this. Just be resolved to the fact that you're going to manage it, you're going to engage it, versus deal with it in a negative sense, and you're going to do the best you can when you get there. And you can't predict things in the sense of knowing, like a psychic, how things are going to come out. But you can always stack the deck in your favor by doing as much as you can that would benefit you regardless of the outcome. And you can only prepare to the degree that you can prepare until you engage the situation where those things that were out of your hands come close to where you can actually talk to somebody. So maybe you can affect the change that you want, and maybe influence the change that the outcome will be more to your benefit. So what are those body states that can influence how we believe, what we believe? Notice I said how first. Has to do with the intensity of the emotion, but also what we believe. Depending on how intense our emotions may be as a result, and it doesn't always have to be a negative. It can even be a happy time, but we have to understand that the intensity of emotion that we may have tends to make us in a social situation very suggestible, especially to things that would be equally or similarly apparent to us that would seem not only close but comfortable. And we may hear things or agree to things that otherwise we would not. And there's definitely what we would call the prevailing state of the situation, wherever if you're in a situation talking with people, there's definitely a certain mental, emotional tone, whether it be professional, whether it be private and personal. And there's a certain rapport that occurs. And rapport happens at the physical level, the body language level. Of course, any spoken message, we have to pay attention to the delivery system. That's body language first, who's delivering it and how their body's responding and acting while they're saying what they're saying, but also the tone of it. How are they delivering? What's it sound like? And if the physical matches the sound of it, well, then that tends to make that message a little more easy to accept. And if they tell us something, we have to run it through our discriminatory awareness. Is this right? Is it not? Is it true? Is it not? Can I trust this? Can I not? Then we are possibly going to be influenced, especially if there is a sense of not only influence, but also one of manipulation, or what we would call shaping in a direction. Like in a situation with sales where somebody may want you to buy something or to do something that they'd want you to do, and the direction starts becoming obvious. And in the common colloquial, we call this buttering somebody up in the United States. So you butter somebody up, then that means that you're getting them all prepared and primed to do what it is you'd like by doing nice things for them first, or saying nice things to them to hopefully get them to do and go along with whatever it is that you're asking or about to say. And whenever we're in a happy state, we can be encouraged to do things that someone else that is happy is doing. If we are in a state where somebody's coming to us because we hold the power in a situation, whether it be the power and control of not only a situation, but a decision, getting somebody to do something for you or with you as a favor to help you out in something that would be difficult or otherwise would be a no. Often somebody will butter somebody up or try to encourage somebody by coming at the situation or the individual more particularly with some soft words, maybe a smile, and some kind, gentle behaviors, and maybe even a trade-off. Sometimes, hey, if you do that for me, I can help you out with these things. So There is something about the state of being similar. Now, when we're angry, we tend to be more apt to be discriminatory and judgmental wherever we may be a little standoffish, maybe even a little isolated. We may move away from a situation, or depending on what our natural responses are, we may be a little more aggressive and a little more invasive in the way we ask things, the way we act. And also, these things are displays that kind of let people know, without necessarily us getting physical, that we are not wanting to do that, and that if they push too hard, there may be danger, or they may get a repercussion of somebody raising their voice or posturing angrily. So if you are angry, could that shape what you believe? It certainly makes you discriminate against what could be told to you that's true, but because the state you're in, you don't trust it because you're more reactive. And they may be telling you, hey, you won the lottery, but you may be less apt to believe it because when we're angry, we're less able, because of the adrenaline in the system, we're less able to discriminate whether or not somebody's authentic in their emotional displays of their facial body language and expressions. They may be absolutely authentic and completely honest about things, but we may be less apt to trust, and we may be more apt to believe the opposite. I can't trust this person versus, okay, well, that's good. I just won the lottery. That's exciting. So that can also shape, filter, and even start or stop whatever could be a positive or negative belief that results from whatever interaction, social interaction that may be going on in our environment. Now, this has been a short instruction on how to manage not only our state, but on how to determine whether or not we are maybe responding to something prematurely. And also, it's an instruction on how to self-regulate by using a self-affirmative term like it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. This doesn't have to be a negative situation where we have self-talk that is not only supportive, but one that is projecting an expectation of an outcome that doesn't have to be overwhelming without knowing what the outcome is going to be. And that also can encourage us to have a better state and to save energy for doing the things that we're doing right now. So it's a self-regulatory skill having to do with recognizing my state shapes how I believe as much as what I believe, but also whether or not I'm willing even to interact with somebody that could shape or change our belief based on what the interaction might be or what they may be bringing. So that is definitely some insight into how we may process in a way that could be beneficial to me right now, or more especially during a stressful situation. And I've used this before, and I have used it often, and I teach it to my students at times as a way to regulate how they interact with clinical staff that would be their peers, or even people that they interact with clinically as a practitioner on their side with a patron or a patient on the other, that may or may not be reasonable whenever they're interacting, and trying to encourage not only good communication, what we'd call rapport, but also encourage people to demonstrate what it is that would be good self-regulatory skills. So for now, that's going to be about it. And this is an early Sunday morning. I want to say that it's about 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, the 21st of January. And I certainly have enjoyed sharing some time with you during this not so sleepy night. And I am looking forward to hearing from you. If you have any feedback for me, you can send it to the email at runningmangetskillsproject@gmail.com. And we're also on YouTube now and on all platforms, major platforms that podcasts can be found. So please share this, like and follow. And if you know of anyone that could benefit from this message or from the podcast generally and the topics that we've covered up until now, please share it with them. Let people know about it. And I certainly look forward to the next time we visit. Take care. Walk well.